This is London. The following official communique has been issued from 10 Downing Street. On September the 1st, His Majesty's ambassador in Berlin was instructed to inform the German government that unless they were prepared to give His Majesty's government in the United Kingdom satisfactory assurances that the German government had suspended all aggressive action against Poland and were prepared promptly to withdraw their forces from Polish territory, His Majesty's government in the United Kingdom would, without hesitation, fulfill their obligations to Poland. At 9 a.m. this morning, His Majesty's ambassador in Berlin informed the German government that unless not later than 11 a.m. British summer time, today, September the 3rd, satisfactory assurances to the above effect had been given by the German government and had reached His Majesty's government in London, a state of war would exist between the two countries as from that hour. His Majesty's government are now awaiting the receipt of any reply that may be made by the German government. The Prime Minister will broadcast to the nation at 11:15. That is the end of the announcement. This is London. You will now hear a statement by the Prime Minister.
I am speaking to you from the Cabinet Room at 10 Downing Street. This morning, the British ambassador in Berlin handed the German government a final note stating that unless we heard from them by 11 o'clock, that they were prepared at once to withdraw their troops from Poland, a state of war would exist between us. I have to tell you now that no such undertaking has been received, and that consequently this country is at war with Germany. You can imagine what a bitter blow it is to me that all my long struggle to win peace has failed. Yet I cannot believe that there is anything more or anything different that I could have done and that would have been more successful. Up to the very last, it would have been quite possible to have arranged a peaceful and honorable settlement between Germany and Poland. But Hitler would not have it. Now may God bless you all, and may he defend the right. For it is evil things that we shall be fighting against: brute force, bad faith, injustice, oppression, and persecution. And against them I am certain that the right will prevail.
Closing of places of entertainment. All cinemas, theatres, and other places of entertainment are to be closed immediately until further notice. In the light of experience, it may be possible to allow the reopening of such places in some areas. They are being closed because if they were hit by a bomb, large numbers would be killed or injured. Sports gatherings and all gatherings for purposes of entertainment and amusement, whether outdoor or indoor, which involve large numbers congregating together, are prohibited until further notice. This refers especially to gatherings for purposes of entertainment. But people are earnestly requested not to crowd together unnecessarily in any circumstances. Churches and other places of public worship will not be closed.
We're on number 12 platform, the train's in, and the children are just arriving, coming along in their school groups with a banner in front saying what school they are. This lot, St. John's School, Walworth, which is south of the river, and then they follow behind. The tiny tots in front, leading up to the bigger ones, the 12, 13-year-olds behind, and here comes a high school, more like 14, 15, and 16. They're being evacuated too. But just for a moment, until we get them settled in their carriages, and I can get them to talk to you, they and the teachers who are with them, I'll try and give you a quick background to their day. They heard yesterday, somewhere about midday, that they were to evacuate. And then there was a scurry and a hurry. Mothers getting clean clothes for their children. Near the end of the week, that's not always so easy. Getting the food ready, finding them satchels, ironing frocks for the girls, getting out greatcoats that have been put away for the summer for the boys, and spending their money on choice bits of food that they could take with them when they reported at their schools this morning. Some of them reported, I don't see these children here, but we'll find out about that later. You can hear them chattering as they come by. Some of them reported very early at their schools, as early as 5 o'clock. And then they were told, the mothers, I suppose, were there to say goodbye to them. The mothers were told that they couldn't go any further with them, and off they marched, perhaps to an underground station, perhaps to a bus station, to entrain, if it was an underground station, or to embus for the terminus, Waterloo Station. None of them knew then, and none of them know now, actually where they're going to. Are you going with them?
Yes.
Tell us now how many you've got to look after here.
I've got 141 children and 16 people helping. They've come from one of the poorest districts in London, very near the famous Elephant and Castle, which no doubt many people have heard. They're all merry and bright. We haven't had a single child crying. And I think really in my heart they're looking forward to this little adventure because many of them have never seen the country before.
I was in the third class dining room on Sunday night. I had been dreadfully sick all day and had just finished a very light supper when the man next to me said, "I think I'll set my watch." I was just in the process of setting my own watch when the loud crash of the explosion came, and the support in the dining room, which was practically beside me, came crashing down. Dishes went flying all over the place. Lights were extinguished immediately. The boat lurched to the port side and everyone went hurtling across the floor. The fumes were so thick that we thought we would be asphyxiated, and the smell was something terrible. Everyone was crying, "Oh my God!" And we never really expected to see daylight. Somehow, I will never know how, I reached the stairs, being separated from my friends in the meantime. When I got up on deck, on the port side, I should say about a mile away, I saw a column of smoke which I took to be from the submarine.
This nation will remain a neutral nation. But I cannot ask that every American remain neutral in thought as well. Even a neutral has a right to take account of facts. Even a neutral cannot be asked to close his mind or close his conscience. I have said not once, but many times, that I have seen war and that I hate war. I say that again and again. I hope the United States will keep out of this war. I believe that it will. And I give you assurance and reassurance that every effort of your government will be directed toward that end. As long as it remains within my power to prevent, there will be no blackout of peace in the United States.
You cannot pass from peace industry into war production without dislocation. I am here tonight to say that the government is doing its utmost to mitigate this dislocation. And insofar as the change has created unemployment, to point out to you what the Prime Minister said 2 days ago in Parliament. Our war effort, so he told you, is to be the maximum effort of the whole country. It will be not less than our war effort in the peak year of the war in 1918. In such an effort, there will be no room for idle hands. Gigantic programs are every day gathering momentum. As I study them, I am certain that at no distant date there is scarcely an able-bodied man or woman whose services the country will not need. I say particularly that all our men and women will be needed. But never, I am sure, will there have been so great a demand for women workers. Be patient, therefore. If you have sought war work and have not yet found it, the war work will soon be seeking you. Yes, the job will be looking for you, and not you for the job.
I cannot forecast you the action of Russia. It is a riddle wrapped in a mystery, inside an enigma. But perhaps there is a key. That key is Russian national interest. It cannot be in accordance with the interest or the safety of Russia that Germany should plant itself upon the shores of the Black Sea, or that it should overrun the Balkan states and subjugate the Slavonic peoples of southeastern Europe. That would be contrary to the historic life interests of Russia.
I walked this morning along a grass bank that marks the extreme limit of the area occupied by British troops. The mainstay of this line is, of course, the larger type of blockhouse, a huge pillbox, which I can perhaps best call a small fort. It has walls which render it proof against practically any form of direct hit, steel doors and shutters of the greatest strength, and apertures for its guns which give a wide field of fire. From inside, I looked this morning over the whole area by periscope. In this case, an instrument that shows so little of its exposed length as to be almost immune from any shelling or bombing. The crew of such a fort have water pumped from the ground and a generous supply of food. They can live and sleep inside indefinitely, but according, of course, to the amount of rations provided, and they can put up a withering blast of fire that may yet come as a nasty shock to enemy tank officers.
I am the commander of this blockade in the battalion sector, about the most important one of the lot, I think. We are feeling very safe inside here, and have all our requirements should we be cut off from our own troops. I could not wish for a better place nor a better set of men to work with, and so long as we are inside this big piece of concrete, I have nothing to fear, and I can't see how it can be captured. I, for one, would never like to have to attack it.
You know, I have not always agreed with Mr. Chamberlain, though we have always been personal friends. But he is a man of very tough fibre. And I can tell you that he is going to fight as obstinately for victory as he did for peace. Can I say more? You may take it absolutely for certain that either all that Britain and France stand for in the modern world will go down, or that Hitler, the Nazi regime, and the recurring German or Prussian menace to Europe will be broken and destroyed. That is the way the matter lies. And everybody had better make up their minds to that solid, somber fact. As you may have noticed, General Goering, I beg pardon, Field Marshal Goering, who is one of the few Germans who has been having a pretty good time for the last few years, says that we have been spared so far because Nazi Germany is so humane. They cannot bear to do anything to hurt anybody. All they ask for is the right to live, and to be let alone to conquer and kill the weak. Their humanity forbids them to apply severities to the strong. Well, it may be true, but when we remember the bestial atrocities they have committed in Poland, we do not feel we wish to ask for any favors to be shown to us. We shall do our duty as long as we have life and strength. I have the sensation and also the conviction that that evil man over there and his cluster of Confederates are not sure of themselves as we are sure of ourselves, that they are harassed in their guilty souls by the thought and by the fear of an ever-approaching retribution for their crimes and for the orgy of destruction in which they have plunged us all. As they look out tonight from their blatant, clattering, panoplied Nazi Germany, they cannot find one single friendly eye in the whole circumference of the globe. Not one. The whole world is against Hitler and Hitlerism. Men of every race and clime feel that this monstrous apparition stands between them and the forward move which is their due and for which the age and times are ripe. Even in Germany itself, there are millions who stand aloof from the seething mass of criminality and corruption constituted by the Nazi party machine. Let them then take courage amid perplexities and perils. For it may well be that the final extinction of a baleful domination will pave the way to a broader solidarity of all the men in all the lands than we ever could have planned if we had not marched together through the fire.
On the 2nd of September, I was driving a number 2 bus from Finchley to West Norwood. En route, my conductor was called to the colours, as he was a reservist. And as I couldn't go on without a conductor, I returned to the garage. I finished my day at 1 o'clock on the Saturday morning and was told to report later that day for ambulance duty. Well, I didn't do very much on the Saturday except have a look around this coach, which had been converted into an ambulance. The next day, war was declared. And almost at once, we started driving patients from the London hospitals to the country. Patients were all very cheerful, and we had no complaints. Nearly always at the journey's end, they thanked me, and we wished each other good luck. I have attended lectures on first aid and have been taught how to help with carrying stretcher cases. We've all heard that the country is ready. This is certainly true of us. We are ready every hour of the day and night for whatever may turn up.
duties of our men have been the same as that of the French, to occupy a light, flexible front line, mainly composed of small infantry and machine gun posts, and to make reconnaissance patrols at night. The first of these patrols, made during last week, met with no success, as no Germans were found. But 2 days ago, a German raiding party attacked a British advance post. It was easily beaten off, and there were no casualties. In this small way, the British Army has gone into action. Hours before, those two lines of rigid, motionless men had been in mud and water on the edge of one of the woods facing the German line. Now they had shining boots, spick-and-span equipment, clean-shaven chins, and tin hats all set at the same jaunty but not too jaunty angles. Perhaps the secret of the boots was that 10 minutes before the King arrived, an army of regimental bootblacks had crept up and down the lines, putting the finishing touches to the feet of the guard. The King went into the house that contains the headquarters of the British force, and there saw maps showing the sector which we are holding. When he came out 5 minutes later, he was beginning his tour of that desolate, evacuated country that lies outside the security of the Maginot Line.
And why did the Soviet government attack us? Had we done them any harm? Had we threatened them? Was there any long-standing dispute between our two countries, which we had refused to settle? No, none whatever. On the contrary, during the protracted negotiations in Moscow, which had preceded this great attack on us, the Finnish government had taken a most accommodating attitude. Again and again they had declared their willingness to find a peaceful solution of the problems raised by the Kremlin, although such a solution would have involved the surrender of Finnish territory. Indeed, even after the Soviet bombs had killed and injured hundreds of our citizens, our government announced to the Moscow government that they were ready to come to terms with them, but only on one condition. We could not give up our right to live as free men and women in the land of our fathers. It was that condition which brought about the terrific Russian attack. The Soviet Union does not want a free Finland. Therefore, it is now seeking to destroy my country. No honest man can find any justification for the Russian invasion of Finland.
It is upon these faithful, trusty servants in the great ships and cruisers that the burden falls directly day after day. In particular, the flotillas of destroyers, of submarines watching in the throat of the Elbe, of anti-submarine craft, of minesweepers multiplying on all our coasts. All these have undergone and are undergoing a toil and strain which only those who are informed in detail can understand. The chance of honor came suddenly to the three cruisers engaged in the South Atlantic. We have to go back a long way in naval history to find any more brilliant and resolute fighting than that of the Exeter, Ajax, and Achilles. But if the call had come elsewhere, in the oceans, or in the narrow seas, skill and courage of equal quality would have been forthcoming. Many vexatious tasks lie before the Royal Navy and before its comrades in the Merchant Navy. And as I always warn you, rough and violent times lie ahead. But everything that has happened since the beginning of this war should give the nation confidence that in the end, the difficulties will be surmounted, the problems solved, and duty done.